Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 277 for October 5th, 2020. We are recording this at 4 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we are going to be talking about the S&P 500 and other things going on in the markets. And you should be seeing Neil Batho's screen right now. So I have arranged for Neil Batho of TraderReview.net and the Option Professor of OptionProfessor.com to join us. And the Option Professor will be moderating today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, thanks, David. A big day in the markets. Everything that wasn't nailed down seems to be going up today pretty much. And it'll be interesting to hear what our guest is going to say about all the different things going on right now. So today, again, we have Neil Batho's with us, and he's going to explain his website a little bit, a little background on himself, and then we're going to dive right into the markets and see what's going on. Neil, introduce yourself if you would.
Okay, thanks, Tim. So I've been running Trader Review for several years now. I used to be a broker back in 98, 99, long time ago now. I realized that being a broker, you know, some brokers can help people, but for me, when they did our training, it turned out to just be an asset gathering job. So that's really what a financial advisor does. We were called investment executives, but it's all the same. They want to gather your assets, put it under their umbrella, diversify you, do a risk objective, et cetera, et cetera. I realized it wasn't for me because there wasn't a lot of strategic stock picking at all in there. You would have to just sort of hand it over to the money managers. So I really wasn't interested in doing a sales job. So I got out of that, did some consulting, and then I started my website, Trader Review. And now I just send out the best possible stocks I can to subscribers. And we've had a great run. We missed the downturn earlier in the year completely, got out 2 weeks beforehand and bought bonds, and they skyrocketed. And we've been buying since the bottom ever since.
All right. So a lot of stuff to go over here today, Neil, but we're going to go over some of our standard questions we have on Mondays. And the first one is the S&P 500. It opened today at 3367. So if you're bullish, you got a jump start of about 30 points, 40 points. But which way do you think the market will go from today's open, 3367, and Friday's close?
Well, I appreciate the jump start, Jim. You never give me one of those four. So, ever.
That's the benefit of going at 4 o'clock rather than 1 o'clock, right?
Yeah, obviously. I'm going to say up. All the technicals are pointing up everywhere I look. And so you got to go with the technicals. I'll get into those a bit later, but I would say, you know, 80, 90% chance up for the week.
Yeah. And you say some of your technicals, but, you know, if you could just expound on some of the fundamental or technical things that you're looking at that leads you to believe that this big move on Monday will be followed by additional upside.
Yeah, sure. So when I worked as a broker, I was lucky enough to do a seminar with another firm, and I was a rookie. I was in my 20s, and I let them take control of the whole thing, but it was on point and figure charting. And when you're in college, they teach you that you can't beat the market because you learn efficient market hypothesis and all of this type of nonsense that you can't beat the market. And it's just simply not true. So remember, it's a hypothesis they're teaching you. You know, it's not fact. They got to teach you something. So I learned a concept in there called the bullish percent concept, invented by Charles Dow in the 1800s. And this is with the XNO charts. And the bullish percent concept will, every stock in the S&P 500 or Dow or whatever you like choose will have one vote if it's on a short-term buy or sell signal. And so this can move from zero to 100. And in the crash earlier in January, it was right around, if I remember correctly, around the mid-70s. And then when it starts ticking down below 70, you know it's going to be bad. And so we just got out. And then when it hit the bottom back in March, it was at 2. So you can imagine only 2% of stocks look good. And then when that reverses, then you can get a huge surge. And so if people want to look up bullish percent, you can find something great there. But I'm going to bring up something else that's, because I can't teach point and figure in this episode, but I'm going to bring up another indicator that I use here. And this is percent of stocks above 50-day moving average. So is that coming up on the chart, Jim?
Yeah, we got it right here.
Okay, so this is something I can teach, you know, right away. I can just show you. So everybody knows, you know, if a stock is above its 50-day moving average, that's probably a good thing. It's probably going to keep moving. And so this will say, well, what percent of stocks are above the 50-day moving average? And if you look back at March, it's, again, around 2. So as this indicator starts moving up, it's a better indicator than just to trade, look at the S&P 500, because as you know, the top three stocks account for, I think it's an astounding 30% now of the entire index, Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple. So here we have a move today up to 51%. But if you'll notice that in September, as stocks were crashing, if you look at around the 60 level, and I can't write on this chart at the moment, but you can see when it was at 60 and it starts moving down, then that's bad. So you want to trade with the overall technicals. And now there's a really big improvement. And so I can even do a shorter time frame. This is percent to stocks above the 20.
But is the cloud still above it?
Actually, you know what? The cloud, you can't really use it on this type of indicator.
Okay.
I just think it's just not really really relevant, but I just can't take it out. But here's the 200 day, and I wouldn't recommend using the 200 on market rebounds because it'll take absolutely forever to get back there. So I would go back here, I would look at the 20 and look at March. And when stocks are crashing and you're thinking, well, when am I going to buy? You look over there at March at that extreme low, and then when it starts ticking up, it's pretty easy to see, okay, stocks are moving up, the percent of stocks are getting better, right? Because when stocks will crash, when there's a big crash, you usually have a stealth bear market beforehand, you know, for a couple weeks or even a couple months, where the smaller stocks in the S&P 500 will start falling off, but the big ones, Amazon, Apple, you know, Facebook, et cetera, will keep going up. So the mega cap stocks will keep rallying, and then you'll see this little stealth market underneath it. And that's when you basically just have your finger on the button to sell, you know, and that's what we did in January. And in January, bonds were rallying also, which that shows increased risk. And so, I mean, I was literally, you know, salivating at the concept of making money on shorts. I was really excited earlier in the year. So,
well, so anyway, those are some of the ideas you have behind why we think we might be higher between now and the end of the week. Could you have any ability to look at short covering or short interest? Because today's action, you know, reeked a little bit of a lot of buying coming in. And of course, a lot of selling has already gone on when we went down to 3,200. So I was wondering if this was an order imbalance day because the president came out of the hospital or is coming out of the hospital and everybody is thinking stimulus might get passed. And if the stimulus got passed before the election, maybe you could get a rally. I mean, is it basically a little short covering and spec that the stimulus might get done because Trump is going to want to get it done before the election?
I think it's a little bit of that. And I think it's a little bit that Nancy will not be in the Oval Office,
right?
Which is the dream of her entire life, to sit behind that desk. So sort of how when stocks started rallying in the spring, stocks. Well, part of the reason they were crashing, not just the virus, they were crashing because of the possible concept that Bernie Sanders may win the nomination,
right,
and could present,
right,
when you have an avowed communist in the United States to be president.
Right.
And so then stocks started rallying when it was as sure as possible he would not be the candidate. And that was enough for stocks to rally. So I think even now, you know, Nancy not behind the desk is enough of a reason for stocks to go up. So.
Right.
But
I was looking at the Qs. I don't know. Do you follow the Qs?
Yeah, I can bring it up.
And if you look from the high point of 303 and the recent low of 260, and you took about 61% of that drop, you get about 26 points, which takes you about 286. And today we hit 280, which was a nice move, but you know, it's coming off of a pretty good drop. And the cloud there, though, does look like it's underneath the market, huh?
Yeah, well, the cloud, stocks can bounce off the top of the cloud. It's used as support and resistance,
right?
But also an area. So as you can see, it moved into the area,
right?
So that means still in a positive trend. And okay. I don't really consider it negative personally, and unless you have about three candles below the cloud, you know, just a tiny little, you know, blip, you know, is not going to be quite enough. But if you look over, you know, I'm going to expand it here to March, where when things were crashing, you know, you can see how, you know, you get that move down, it breaks it, and then you get the inevitable little bit of a rally and then the big move down. So cloud is very effective. In this particular instance, it didn't get you out at the top, but it certainly got you out about, you know, less than half of the move down. But we actually got out 2 weeks before this happened because the bullish percent I was talking about had turned down and bonds were going up. And I thought this looks bad, looks real risky here. So that's where we got out. But what was your question about the Qs? I'm just going to expand it here.
Oh, I was just looking at it technically from the standpoint of the high was 303 and change. The low was about 260.
Yeah.
So that gives you about, 43 points. If you went with 61% of that, you're at about 26 points. So a throwback towards 286 would still be within the parameters of a correction. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. You know, as far as a rebound.
In other words, we got very fluid news coming out. And the news today was obviously very bullish for people because, again, they're reading a lot into the tea leaves that, you know, Trump's going to come back and then he's going to get this deal done and then everything's going to be fine. So there was a tremendous amount of buying today. And obviously, there wasn't a lot of selling. So that's when you get an order imbalance, you go up 60 points on the S&P. And then then you have to obviously turn around Tuesday, staring you in the face. Will the news be consistent, or will it be fluid going the other way? And, you know, is this thing going to go back to the highs, or is it going to have some trouble between 280 and 286, which is that Fibonacci throwback number?
Yeah, one of the things there is that Tenken line, this is part of Ichimoku cloud study, that red line there can be sort of some resistance. And it's getting more and more popular in the West over the last 10 years. And people know where those lines are, you know, so it'll be a little bit difficult to get past 280. But one of the things about that recent rally is that when I was a broker in the exam we had to take, we had to learn about odd lots. And when there's a tremendous amount of odd lots, so these are, you know, rookie traders buying, you know, 75 shares and 103 shares and things like that. And when you have a tremendous spike in odd lots, then it's almost assuredly a market top. So I'm glad we talked about this, Jim, because that was on my list to try to find an odd lot indicator or even just program one myself. And then you'll know that that big spike up there was just the guys from Robinhood.
You know, right.
And if you know it's the guys from Robinhood, you can think, okay, great. This is not a real rally. You know, I can look to possibly short it at any moment and then we'll get back to business, you know? So I think it might've just been an odd lot rally.
You know, it's funny. I was told that the reason these companies now sell stocks by the slice, where you can have a $5 bill and get right. fractional shares, is because of all their market making, they are loaded around with a lot of odd lot shares. Yeah. And this is a way for them to like get rid of that inventory.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because, you know, I was wondering, why would they want people to be trying to put in $50? What's in it for them? And I guess what's in it for them is they have inventory of odd lot shares that they've had to be involved in, and their market. That's what I heard. I don't know if it's true or not, but it makes sense that something like that could occur.
Yeah, I should do a Google alert for odd lots. So whenever any news comes out for odd lots, then it comes out.
Now, as far as what you're looking at in the markets, do you have different sectors you look at, or are you just looking at a basket that you keep a track of, or, you know, what do you look at?
I try to look at, you know, stocks that are a combination of just sectors. So my basic analysis is, where's the market going? After that, where are the sectors going? And then where are the individual stocks going? So I'm looking at the market. I'm thinking, okay, market's pretty good. And then I'll look at the sectors. And I've been avoiding financials for a while, but I'm thinking about getting back into financials soon. And we've been avoiding oil and gas for months, even though we bought some on the rebound. But I think today, actually just today, is time to get back into oil stocks. And so we actually got into the ETF Gush.
I never heard of that one.
Yeah, well, it's
who underwrites Gush?
That's why I like to trade it.
Yeah, I said, who underwrites that? Who's the sponsor of it?
It might be Direxion.
It is Direxion. You're right.
Yeah,
and it's two times, so it's got leverage.
Yeah, I do a lot of the leverage ETFs, so oil and gas.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, Chevron goes down to 70 and it pays 7%, and they've got a decent balance sheet from what I understand. You know, that can't be a terrible thing. And I think Royal Dutch Shell is at a 25-year low and Exxon is in the 30s. And every time I go on the highway, I don't see everyone is in a Tesla, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and you need oil to dig up the minerals, don't you, with all the equipment. Yeah.
And then, so, of course, if we ever get back to travel again, you'll have those guys coming on board.
Sorry, which guys?
You know, airlines. You know, right now they don't need any fuel, but, we start traveling again at any kind of a clip next year, you're going to need fuel.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think, well, I'm just going to wait until people are flying again, and then I'm going to buy gasoline. Well, you can't do that. Months ahead of time, where you think, okay, I mean, that was what it was like back in March, April. People thought, hey, you know, this virus is going to go away in a couple months, so they're buying oil stocks. And then all of a sudden, oh, wait a sec, maybe it's not going to go away. Okay, we're selling oil stocks. But you got to look ahead. It's like a moving target that's 3 to 6 months in the future that you're always trying to hit. And once that target moves too far in the other direction, you just need to get out and wait. That's a good analogy.
Well, the low on Gush is right around that 18 area, I guess, in the recent time.
Okay, I'll just bring it up here.
Yeah, it's up 10% almost today. So obviously somebody's getting in, and it does have a little bit of a low surrounded by higher lows. So at least you have a place to defend against, right? Yeah, you see that green at the bottom there? That green, that big green bar. That's pretty much
That's significant, you know.
Well, it better be if you're long.
Yeah.
And yeah, it looks like, and it looks like it is, and it looks like it could be anyway. Yeah.
And you can clearly see sort of two moves to the bottom. So around August 20th or so, you get a bit of a rally. Another one early September, and you know these are what's shaking out everybody. Mm-hmm. And so on a decent pullback, you know, in a negative trend, you can have two, three, or more. So at least I can see here that we have three. You know,
and you wouldn't match that up with relative strength to see like when we made the low in September and now we've made a low in October. If the RSI is higher now than it was in September, that could be a decent indicator of a turn as well.
Sort of like,
yeah, look, yeah, there you go. You got a little
indicator on itself.
Yeah. In other words, like you made the low and the RSI was right at the low. Here we've made another fairly substantial lower low and the RSI has not really cracked any lower. And some might say that that is an indication of exhaustion.
I would agree.
You know, some might say.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a bottom fisher, you know, you're not going to be get rich in the market looking for deals all the time, but there comes a time when you've got to go for it on something like this. So
now on a little bit of a contrary opinion, you know, I've been thinking that the bond market is going to roll over and maybe go down pretty hard. And if that were to happen, that means yields are going to be higher in the long end. And that would be the recipe for the banks to do well. So I think this TLT at 180, that's about all you're going to see on that for a while. And it could start accelerating to the downside. See what you see on TLT.
Yeah, and, it's horrible. I would be out of completely.
Yeah, well, that means yields are rising. And long-term yields rising is not going to be bad for the banks who want to borrow your money in the money market account for zero and then loan out 20 years at a good rate, you know,
and also trade your own money in the market.
Yeah, but it does look like there's a substantial risk for yields to rise, which people would be shocked about because they think the Fed's going to keep rates low. But Fed keeps rates low in the 0 to 10 year frame. They don't do the 20 year too much. And people who loan money for 20 years, you know, they're going to get nervous if things get hot and they're in these 1% bonds, you know?
Yeah, I think so. There's just no reason to be in bonds now at all. And I don't even have to bring up a relative strength chart for bonds. All I have to do is look at this. Since May, it's done nothing, you know, since it's done nothing while the market's been up. So if you look at the relative strength of the long bond and all bonds compared to the market, it's just worse and worse and worse all the time. And then eventually it's going to crack. And today it cracked.
I mean, but is there a possibility for an acceleration, do you think, looking at your technical stuff?
For bonds to fall?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The gap gets filled, Jim, you know, so we could go all the way back to 145. I mean, there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
Really.
It seemed like it anyway.
A good thing here is, so if you look a little bit after March, you can see the massive spike up,
right?
And huge sell off down. That's where you have to be super careful because you can trade leveraged bond futures and you can make millions because you can go, I mean, 20, I think you may even be able to go 40 times, but I know you can go 20 times leverage on the bond futures. And if you look at how beautiful this trend can be when you time it perfectly around February, you see that there's the first that move up, pullback, mm-hmm. and then a beautiful, huge move up. Well, people think bonds are boring, but when it goes from 145 to 175 in 2 weeks, that's not boring, you know.
Right.
But then what happened is right around that time is when Powell comes out, oh, we're going to drop the rates to zero. We're going to bail everybody out forever. You know, we're not even thinking about raising rates. And then you have this massive move down in bonds. And that was done in the futures market.
Right.
And it had 80s. And we talked about this on another show before where there's a famous analyst calls them the bond vigilantes. And these are guys on a trading floor somewhere that control the futures market, and it's only going to take a few billion dollars to crash the bond market, and they can do it at will. And they send a message to Washington and they say, you know what, you're not going to turn America into a banana republic and print money forever, because
right.
if you try, we're going to crash the bond market, and we can do it, and we're going to prove it to you. And it's exactly what they did. So if you are long, if you are leveraged, a lot of people got wiped out that day.
I think you know, to be honest, with regards to how much debt is out there, I mean, you know, somebody's going to want their money, and you know, they tend to want it all at the same time.
Yeah.
And when they all, it's like, it's a wonderful life. You know, they're all going to go down to the building and loan and see if George Bailey has their money behind the curtain there. And then he's got to explain that he's loaned it out on all the houses in Pottersville, you know? Well, you know, people all want to redeem bonds because the yields start rising. You know, these dealers on the other side of the game, you know, they don't have the money to take an avalanche. We saw that in March when if the Fed didn't step in, the entire, all the fixed income market would have gone to dust.
Yeah.
Because the broker dealers, they're going to put their own checkbook in front of a freight train.
No, I don't advise standing in front of freight trains, Jim. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's a couple of things going on. Anything else that you're targeting? You like a little energy down here? What else are you looking at?
Well, I'm just bringing up the yields for you.
Oh, okay.
On the different, just for some people that don't know about the yield curve. So we have 30-year at the moment. If you buy 30-year bond today, you will get a 1.58% yield. And then you got the 10-year, the 5-year, the 2-year, and the 3 months. And so
now the three months is what they're paying on money market, 0.10.
Looks like it, yeah. You know? That was actually negative for a little while this year.
Yeah, and they're trying to loan at 20 and 30 and trying to get a buck and a half, and they'd love to see it go to 2 or 2.5.
Yeah.
And then there's a spread, and that's when your banks could make a roll. Do you have some banks that you're looking at, or are you looking at an ETF? What are you doing with the banks?
I'm thinking about getting into banks, but like I said, I'm not really a big bottom fisher,
right.
But IYF, I'll just bring it up. So this is a financial ETF that is non-leveraged. And as you can see, since June, it's basically done nothing. So, you know, you're not going to make money trading this, something like this in and out. But, you know, if a stock's going to start a positive trend again, it has to do it from somewhere, right?
Right.
So, you know, I'm definitely looking at getting back into these as early as tomorrow. Yeah. A lot of people buying houses. It's not going to stop. The rich are going to get richer and the poor are going to get poorer because of inflation.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. So you better be on the non-poor side and do what you can, you know. I'm super bullish on housing, and I've been bullish since January through everything. I just said, you know, Fed's putting rates down to zero. I forecasted a 30-year mortgage to be at 2.2% back in January, and I think it's going to hit there. And the government's got to get people into houses, or you're going to have more and more civil unrest.
Right.
And what do they care if they got to bail out Freddie and Fannie again, because they're borrowing money at almost 0%. So, you know, anything the government can do to get people into houses better, as far as I'm concerned. And
how about a couple of banks that people say are obviously way out of favor? Citigroup, C, supposed to be at like 60% of book. So you're buying it cheaper than at the great financial crisis low. This is cheap. This, when it hit 41 or something, it was lower than the great financial crisis low. That looks like it has value at 41, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you could get a move up to, you know, 50.
Yeah.
And gap there, sure.
Yeah, 20% is nothing wrong with that. And what about Wells Fargo? Everybody hates them, but they got about 9 trillion customers still.
Well, it's because they got that nice logo with the wagon. Everybody likes
right.
It makes you feel...
And they got those salesmen you were talking about doing mutual funds or whatever.
You're in Old West or something. Let's see. Ooh, ouch. Yeah, I mean, if you're a bottom fisher, I'm not a big bottom fisher, but all I got to do is... Well, did that CEO get fired, or is he still around who had all
No, he's still around. He made that one comment about minority talent, but I think he did enough Hail Marys and Our Fathers to get him through.
Well, I mean, if he resigns, then yeah, Wells Fargo's a go, I would say.
Yeah, the last thing he needed was to make a stupid comment that makes everybody irate.
Yeah.
Because they're still trying to get past that everybody had a credit card that they didn't order a problem, you know?
I was actually not familiar with that. I just knew they had millions of some sort of fake accounts.
Yeah, I think they were signing people up for credit cards or something. I'm not exactly sure, but I had something to do with accounts that shouldn't have been opened or something like that.
Yeah.
Somebody was getting paid by the new account, apparently, and they stretched it a little bit, I guess.
Pretty hard to not get caught.
Anyway, so we got the banks a little bit, but not yet, maybe. And then you got the energy looks pretty good. What about these department stores? Like, do you do anything with like Ross Dress for, you know, ROST or TJX? Because supposedly at some point we're going to go back and shop at these places because they're cheap.
Ross is where I used to shop when I was a broker making $2,200 a month.
But you got name brands for less.
That's why I went.
You could look like you went to Beverly Hills, but you really went to Santa Ana.
You want me to look? Okay, you know, have you noticed, Jim, that I know all these ticker symbols? I just type them in.
Yeah, ROST.
I've been around a while. I know what they are. I know what they are. You know, hey, I'm liking this, Jim. I'm liking this. This is just the weekly, but it shows a little breakout there. People might want to get back to work. Let's see here. Yeah, maybe a little bit more, and I would go for it.
What about TJX? TJX is another cheapie.
Oh, yeah, TJ Maxx, yeah. I also used to shop there.
That's where you got your coats, right? Burlington Coat Factory.
Yeah, what you got there. Yeah, maybe a little bit, well, not quite yet. There's a retail ETF, though, RTH, I believe. Yeah, maybe just go with the ETF here. I think the ETF looks okay.
Yeah, has a lot of green there.
Yeah.
Like I say, are we getting closer to the therapeutics and to the vaccine or further away? So most people would say closer. Are we getting further away from the stimulus? Most people would say closer. So according to all these people, they think that the sideline money is going to run into the market and get everybody going here. We'll have to see.
Or, you know, what about buy the rumor, sell the news, Jim, right? I mean, a vaccine is almost going to be imminent.
Right.
People's buying the market as the first day it's available, sell your stocks in case the whole bloody thing is toxic and hospitals can't get, you know, don't have enough beds for the people to get in. So
yeah, I mean, the virus is a wild card. If it's very bad and we have to close down again, nothing like that is discounted at all. And what do you call it? If the stimulus comes out and it's very skinny, that's, I don't think that's discounted at all. And if earnings, the comparisons are going to get tougher because obviously the demand was pulled forward. So some of these companies like Zoom might have a hard time repeating some of their COVID numbers. Huh?
Yeah, it's all about future expectations and the earnings. So it doesn't matter how great your earnings are one quarter, it's only what you project them to be the next quarter. And if you're growing at 35% and you say things are going to be awesome, we're going to totally grow next year, but only at 25%, then that stock's selling off 10% after hours, that's for sure. So
now silver and gold got a bang to the upside. Is it a dead cat bounce, or then there's more wood to chop underneath, or do you think they might have hit their lows?
I don't like these big rebound plays. Okay, I'll bring up gold here. So you got to think, why do people buy gold? It's because they think gold is better than stocks, right? And a lot of times gold is better than stocks. And, you know, in the early 2000s, all we did was trade oil and gold for basically 2-3 years straight. But it doesn't mean, you know, it's always the place to be, right? If someone was to say, hey, Neil, you need to bury $2,000 in Federal Reserve notes or a 1 ounce coin for the next 20 years, I'd say, well, give me the gold coin, you know. But yeah, you might get something here, but it's pure speculation at this point. We haven't traded gold and silver in a while. We traded silver earlier in the year, and twice we got gains of over 40% on some leveraged ETFs, which was great, but I'm just not really into it right now. Gold goes up because there's an increase in the money supply and deficit spending, you know, so if Bernie Sanders was president, gold would be at 5,000 an ounce, you know, so I'm not big on it at the moment.
So a lot of times you'll use the leverage ETF to express your opinion, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll specialize in the entry point. So for example, since we got the gold chart up here, so just below right around the 1800 level, you know, 1750, 1800, right. The trend was so nice and so beautiful. That's when I'll get into a leveraged ETF. On a type of strange rebound play here, I don't really know what's going on, then, you know, I'll just avoid it. So normally when I trade, I like to trade the best things that are available, and I'll use a leveraged ETF. But if I'm a little less confident or a sector is just starting to get into favor, then maybe, you know, maybe we'll use just the single leverage ETF, like I said on the financials. Here's a good example of what we did. This is AGQ, the double leverage silver ETF.
Oh, yeah.
So just a little bit after July, we had this massive move. And so we were in this double leverage ETF because unfortunately the triple one, which we used earlier in the year, was delisted. I can't believe it. I don't know how they could do that to me. So anyway, we got in around the 30s and then sold, you know, around close to 50 in literally a week, something like that, I think, a week or a little less than 2 weeks. So when something looks, I mean, so incredibly nice, and then now it's just a rebound speculation play. It's not going to have a nice trend for a long time. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, when you get a parabolic move and then it comes down, a lot of times it takes a lot of time for those moving averages to catch up with the price because they got so far away from them. And so that's why you get bouncy. I thought it was going to stay in a range of 30 and 24, and then at some point pull back maybe to 19 or 21. It did pull back towards 22, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it went further than a lot of people thought and further than I thought. So we didn't hold quite to the top, unfortunately. We got out around that first amount of crazy consolidation. But since I got the chart up, if you look back at March, at that move down to $12, I mean, we hadn't traded gold and silver for quite some time earlier over last year. But when I saw silver went to $12, literally at the exact same time, interest rates go to zero and Jerome Jerome Powell is saying he's going to print trillions. I look at this and I thought to myself, I've never seen such a good trade in 20 years. Mm-hmm. I literally was ecstatic. And I wrote all my members. I said, look, we don't normally trade the futures market, but get into silver futures immediately because this is going to go up. It has to go up. And you could have just made a killing. I mean, we made like 46% on the triple leverage ETF there. And then that was delisted. We made 40 something percent after again. But if you ever see something like that, that's why I say you always have to get approved futures because you never know when you're going to need it. And I mean, good God, I've never seen anything like that in my life. Maybe something's JP Morgan's naked shorting that they've been accused of. I didn't know and I didn't care. So.
With regards to any other commodities like coffee, sugar, soybeans, is there a future in any of those?
I have sugar on my list here.
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking that as soon as it broke above 1230 recently, it was get into the pool. But nothing can really be trusted in this environment.
Well, what I know about sugar is that when stocks really crash, sugar's a good place to go.
And do you see 12? Do you see the 1230 area I was talking about? That's pretty much where it broke out from. So that was a good entry level.
Yeah, it looks good.
And it's up today again, huh? A little bit.
Yeah. I was following this earlier in the year, but not so much lately because the market's just sort of been in full swing.
Yeah. What about the big debate, Neil, about value and growth? How about if we took like SPYV, which is the S&P for value? Does it look like it's actually going to take off? Because you know it tried to take off, and everyone got in there, and then it pulled back. And it's had so many false starts, people are afraid to trust it.
Yeah.
It looks like it's still got a little more wood to chop to get above the resistance, huh?
Yeah, I was with the value train for a little while there, but growth just keeps beating it.
Yeah.
And value keeps trying.
I think it's because the value needs to have these yields rise and these banks to get on their bicycle to make them feel like the economy is really going to re-engage. Because if it's not, you got to go with the Pelotons and the Zooms and the Teladoc and the... cloud business and everything that benefits work at home.
Yeah, you know, you just got to stay with the trend until the end. And sometimes trends can go longer than you ever think possible. I mean, can Zoom reach 1,000? Who knows? Maybe.
Well, with zero interest rates, the valuations can go anywhere they want.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of valuations, I mean, Apple's price to earnings ratio, last I checked, was 40.
Why don't you throw it up there and see what that chart looks like? Because a lot of people were talking 80 to 100 would be the place to get on board. But it went to 103, and now it's kind of going the other way a little bit. But is it something you can trust?
I don't trade Apple, but I just checked the PE. It's 35.
Yeah, it was at almost 40. Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I believe Apple's PE was only 20.
Yeah.
So it's not just a stock rally. People have to remember it's a PE rally. It's a PE rally.
Right. And if those yields on the long rates go up, that changes the calculus. That's why the interest rate, the yields on treasury bonds rising, you know, changes the mathematics on how you figure valuation, because part of the valuation is the yield versus treasury. They call it risk-free yield.
Huh? Can you go a bit more in depth on that? So you're trying to say...
Yeah, basically, when they're trying to evaluate a stock, obviously they're going off of, you know, sales and earnings and, you know, revenues, whatever. But they also factor in the interest rate environment. And when the interest rate environment shows you almost zero on interest rates, valuations can be stretched because you're not competing against anything.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, there's no competition in a zero interest rate at a treasury.
No.
So they then will be more liberal on how much they will pay for one share of stock. Yeah. Problem is, as soon as they blow the whistle out on the low interest rate environment for whatever reason, everybody has to change the calculus. And if the earnings are going to pull back and the valuations are going to pull back, that's how you can get some pretty significant drops. Apple, you know, they're betting pot on the 5G and the Apple 11. And, you know, obviously, historically, they've been able to sell out of these things very, very well. So that's obviously the way people are betting. But if that's not the way the cards turn, you got a lot of people leaning one way and going the other. Because I heard Apple really hasn't increased their sales of the iPhones lately. They just increased prices on some things, which makes their revenues look better, but their amount of unit sales haven't been growing. But Apple's a hard one to say anything negative about because obviously it's been such a great performer.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the PE is 35 and the yield is 0.73 because eventually a growth company has to pay a dividend. But you know what I think of sometimes, Jim? I mean, if you bought this stock 10 years ago, well, your yield is what? 20% maybe?
Exactly.
So you're making killing. You put on 100 grand 10 years ago. Well, Apple's paying you 10 grand a year now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the big one for the home run this year has been that I was talking about was Freeport MacMoran started at $5 and it's tripled, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's always a great one for building and a weak dollar environment.
Infrastructure.
Yeah. It was a big one in the early 2000s.
Yeah. There it is up again. It's up again.
Yeah.
But it was a screaming buy down there at $5. Because, you know, at $5, anything like this, they're either going to go out of business or you're going to fly. So it's like buying an option that never expires.
True. Basically, rallying due to not going out of business.
Right.
True.
GE was supposed to be that as well when it went down to about $5.
Oh, man, I haven't looked at that in over a year. I don't even know.
Well, they're trying to figure out how to clean up the shop and, you know, pay down debt and everything else. Yeah.
The relative strength, I mean, just looking at the chart is basically at nothing.
One that shocked me was Bed Bath & Beyond, BBY.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I go to the mailbox, they have that 20% off coupon in there.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And that thing went from 4 to 20 almost.
Yeah.
That was a five-bagger. See, that's what guys like Tom Lee of Fundstrat are saying. These epicenter stocks that got hit way, way, way down, they're going to have another day, and that's going to be where the bait is coming from, not tech, because obviously it's going to be hard for tech to do what this thing just did, which is go up 5 times in value, because it's already had a big run, you know? So that's why he's saying, like, maybe these airlines, maybe retailers like these people, maybe rent-a-car companies, maybe some hotels, Starwood Hotels or something, STWD, you know, maybe there's value in something like that. That's the lead dog right there. I mean, semis is like buying the Ferrari.
It's my favorite thing to trade are semiconductors. Yeah. I mean, that's basically what I think runs the economy are semiconductors, yeah. You know.
And with all the gaming, right? Activision's going nuts. Sony's going to come out with that new PlayStation. Nvidia's got all the consoles.
I don't know much about gaming because I don't game.
Yeah, well,
but a couple lot of teenagers people do, and that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know enough about it that people are doing it, right?
You know, I've heard that some people are such good gamers and they get to such high levels in these games that they will do something like, you know, maybe they'll get superpowers or something like that.
Right.
And they can sell their login ID or whatever it is for that game for $100,000 or more because they got to these huge levels. And there's some people out there that are, you know, enthusiasts and they've got a lot of money and they think, oh man, I get the super crystal sword or something like that. And they want it real bad and they just buy it off these guys. So I've heard that some of these hardcore gamers make a pretty good living selling these games where they got to high levels.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I was actually into that in college, you know, like this was almost 20 years ago, but
oh yeah,
I was into EverQuest and I had this scheme or process I would do where I would buy in-game gold and then trade it for certain items and then resell the items for real money and make a profit that way. So what was that?
There you have it.
Yeah. It was player auctions was the site, but yeah, there was people and I guess still that they were selling their accounts for thousands of dollars. They'd create accounts and play them up and then sell them or they'd like I said, get items and sell them, sort of thing. So and then I guess I never played it that much, but World of Warcraft was even more popular a few years after that. And
oh yeah, that's the big one.
Yeah.
So if anyone on this show has kids that are addicted to video games, tell them they should be trying to make some money.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. But there's now I think more of the money is in is streaming. People do like they stream themselves playing the games to YouTube or some other platform and people watch other people play games now. So
I don't know why you would want to do that.
Yeah, I don't quite get it either.
I could have people watch me trade, but I don't think anyone's signing up.
Well, there's people doing that too. Yeah.
So Neil, is there any other area that you're kind of focused on you'd like to expound upon before we get to the top of the hour?
Yes, actually, Jim, thank you for asking. And that is something really boring called real estate investment trusts.
Oh, REITs.
Which have actually been moving. And you know what else has been moving? Has been utilities.
Yes, they are. Yeah, those are good. Those are good tips. Yeah.
Here's one that I trade sometimes called American Electric Power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the move 80 to 87. I mean, for a utility, that's pretty darn good in only 5-6 days.
How about one that I own, PEG? I don't know what I paid for it. It's been in there so long. They pay a decent dividend, though, and they're New Jersey and New York, so I got to figure they need lights. Yeah, that's doing all right. Nothing to write home about like yours, though.
Well, no. I mean, it's got higher lows. So, I mean, once this breaks out, you know.
They're going to have to get their income someplace. They're not going to get it from the B of A money market account.
Here's another REIT equity residential. It's maybe not the best one, but I got it off the top of my head.
What about NLY, Annaly?
I remember that one. They paid a 10% yield once a year, right?
Yeah, and then they dropped the price 10%, so you're nowhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. but people want that payout real bad. No, I would avoid this. I don't like that. It's just not a real trend, in my opinion.
No.
I always thought this was a little bit of a funny company paying that one-time yearly dividend.
Oh, yeah. What about that Simon Properties, SPG, I think?
Oh, right. They own the malls, and they paid a good yield, and let's see.
No, they were going to merge with a company, and then the other company backed out or something.
Ooh, not looking so good. No. So there's the move earlier in the year with people thinking, hey, the malls are actually not going to go bankrupt, and I'm going to get my Simon Property yield, and then, oh, no one's going to go to the mall, and then here we are. That was a little bit of hope again, you know?
Yeah. When I look at those things, I look at the Vanguard VNQ, and that seems to be on the verge of breaking out to the upside. That pays a decent dividend, and let them do the homework and pick them, you know? Yeah, that looks like it wants to go someplace, maybe if you can get above that 84, huh?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I learned in trading is don't try to time that breakout before it happens.
Right.
You know?
Just you buy it and just hope it doesn't take out 75?
Well, just pretend the bottom there is knocked off, and we just have sideways movement, you know, right. Around 3. I wouldn't be buying around 83 constantly hoping it's going to break out one day.
No.
Better to wait till it actually breaks out.
Yeah, because there's a lot of real estate. If it's going to go, it's going to go.
So,
in other words, if it's got a 15% move ahead of it, it doesn't matter that you gave up 3% before you got on board.
Exactly, because you can be waiting around for months until it finally gets a move.
You want to make sure the band is there and the girls are there before you go to the party.
You got to write that down, send it to me, Jim.
You don't want to be sitting on the front lawn in your lawn chair waiting for those two items to show up.
Well, that's what I did at the fraternity house, Jim. <In the workout. laughs>
Hey, how about we do a little spitballing here? FireEye.
What is the ticker for that?
I think it's F. Isn't it FIRE? Maybe they'll give you
office type.
There it is. FEYE.
Okay, and what is this?
I think it's some cloud or security or something like that. The tech oriented thing. But people were kind of. How about those gambling stocks or DraftKings? Do you like DraftKings? DKNG.
Let's see.
Ever since the NFL started, this thing's been on fire, along with Penn Gaming and Churchill Downs. But it was down today. Yeah, it's overbought. But there's an interest there. There's no doubt about that. These guys are hooked up with ESPN, so you got the junkie guys watching the games, and now you got them at home with these. You can bet every jump ball.
Wow.
You know, and the people get hooked on this stuff. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's not for me. I think that's that Michael Jordan pop. Well, what about your area? Jim, what about the Las Vegas Sands? What story in Las Vegas?
The story basically is MGM Grand and some people think Wynn, WYNN. They actually like Wynn quite a bit at the 70 area. I think it's in 70. Yeah. But MGM's got some stuff going with the gambling. Anybody who's got into the gambling is getting a pop, as you can see. So they got a pretty good sports book at MGM. And there goes the Wynn, under the cloud.
You could definitely get a pop here.
Yeah. That's why I said that 71 looked like. Another one that I've been fond of is Gilead, GILD. I thought 61, 62 was a good area. Let's see what it looks like today. I think it's popping a little bit. Yeah, a little pop.
Well, that's strange. So this is a biotech stock that hasn't participated in any biotech rally.
Yeah, I think because they took a backseat to Moderna. Moderna had the MDRN or MDNR. Moderna, MDNR. You just buy the basket that way. Yeah. They all popped today, so you should have gotten something. I think that's Moderna, isn't it? MDRN, maybe. Yeah, Moderna.
Oh, I think I might have. I think I did the wrong one.
Oh.
I don't know.
Well, another one that popped here today was you had Moderna popping quite a bit, and that Novavax.
I just brought up the
single
biotech ETF, and we've traded biotech a few times. I like to do LABU, the triple leveraged. You got to be a little bit careful here because it's sort of like a spike of, hey, the new treatment worked on Trump, yay,
right.
And it's, you know, and then it's down the next day, you know, so got to be a bit careful of that kind of stuff.
That's how people got in trouble with Gilead, 82 to 62, because they were hot for a while and then they fooled off.
Yeah, I mean it's a sketchy one. I can practically guarantee you, Jim, and I'm not a doctor, so this is for entertainment purposes only.
Right.
But as soon as that vaccine comes out, we'll already be at by far the lowest hospitalization rate.
Yeah, you know, that's how Murphy works, right?
It's always like that.
Yeah.
And then after everyone's vaccinated, 6 months later, they'll say, see, look, the vaccine did it. And all you have to do is graph and look at the numbers and say, well, actually, it probably didn't. It would have gone away anyway. You know,
it's like the suntan lotion showing coming up after the clouds cover the sun.
Right. So the clouds came out and then you put the suntan lotion on.
There was no sun.
And then you come back and you say, see, I told you you got to wear sunscreen, right? I mean, you know. Correlation versus causation, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that's my personal opinion. And I, you know, I used to be a big Ron Paul guy.
Yeah.
Back when he was running the last couple times. I actually think he could have won the second time he ran. He just didn't even realize he could have won and he didn't go for it enough, but it really
right.
Could. And then he got, at the convention, they did a vote to scam him out of participating in the convention, actually.
Right.
That's a whole nother story, but, you know, he's a doctor and he writes some stuff sometimes and he said that There was a swine flu, not the last one, but before that, where he said the vaccine was way more dangerous than just
then they're letting on
rolling the dice.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, I trust Ron Paul's opinion on most things.
Right.
I think he blew it when he wanted to go back to the gold and silver standard overnight. I mean, it's just not going to work.
Right.
You know, you can't buy a fleet of F-35 fighter jets when you're on the gold standard, when you kind of need them.
Right.
Considering what's going on in the world, you know, with China and Russia, and you can't say, well, we're going back to the gold and silver standard. And that's, you know, I can't keep blew it a bit there. But I mean, I like the gold and silver standard, but I just didn't think it was going to work at the moment. No.
Well, listen, Neil, we are at the top of the hour. So why don't you wrap it up by, again, reintroducing yourself, your website. And if you have any special offers, this would be a great time to extend them at that time.
Sure. Yeah. Just sign up, traderreview.net. I give away a lot of good overall information on the markets and where I think things are headed and give good overall commentary. Back in January, I told everyone to sell their 401ks, and I hadn't done that in 10 years since the last crash. And I got a couple emails, people telling me I'm crazy and stop sending out my newsletter. And I said, well, that's fine, but I give away a lot of good overall commentary. I may not give the exact picks, and that's for private members, but if you want to sign up, you can do that too. And it's only $29 for your first month. If you want to do that, you get a model portfolio to copy into your own account.
Sure. All right. Well, that's the way you can get a hold of Neil. And each week, optionprofessor.com does have a weekly update on everything from the stock market, bond market, interest rates, U.S. dollar, gold, silver, copper. We got into looking at some soybean, coffee, sugar, and also the treasury bonds and the junk bonds and overall economics. So you get an awful lot and it's free of charge. So all you got to do is go to optionprofessor.com and we discuss different things that are on our radar, ETFs and stocks and things like that. So optionprofessor.com. And then you put in your information. And then next week, you'll start getting every week the market update. And you can see other things that can be done as well. So, Neil, thanks for being here. I think we went over a lot of good stuff. And David, I'm going to throw it back to you. And thanks, everybody, for being here. Hope you picked up something. And we'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show today. Lots of good info. Please be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory to get updates on new episodes. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows or events. I keep all the recordings publicly available on the site. Also, be sure to join us tomorrow for Analyze Your Trade at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Mike Pisani will be back to join us for that one. And then also later in the month, be sure to mark your calendar for, we're going to have a special VIX and news trading event on October 22nd. So that'll be all day on Thursday, October 22nd, a series of lectures all about trading the VIX or trading news. So, and then, just want to thank my guests again for today, Neil Batho of TraderReview.net and Jim, the option professor at optionprofessor.com. Thanks everyone.